Bizarrely, we'd had some good chances. Chops missed a great chance when it was 3-1. That would have made it 3-2. Eventually, I knew I had to go back into work. But I don't think I went to the training ground till the following Friday. Somehow, I think, I need that self-loathing. I don't want to wake the next morning and say, ah, well, it's gone now. The only time we'd try to be clever tactically, we'd play with a sitting midfielder, who, 9 times out of 10, would be Dwight York. There are only 3 or 4 systems you can play. That's not to say you can't have an influence. You tweak things, you change things, you make substitutions at the right time. Brian Clough and Alex Ferguson kept it simple. When I managed, I kept it very simple. It's a simple game. Pass it, then move. Try and score more goals than them. Win your tackles. Yorkie had played in that role for his country, Trinidad, towards the end of his career. We'd played him in midfield in our promotion season, but in the Premiership, we sometimes played him with 2 in front of him, in the Makaleli position. We do this when we're trying to be a bit more defensive, against the better teams. Arsenal at home, United away, Chelsea, the bigger teams. If we thought we were going to get overrun in midfield. We didn't always do it, and when we didn't, it often backfired because we got overrun. I'd play 4-4-2 and say, come on, let's get at them. I'd think completely differently now, but at the time, I thought that playing the sitting midfielder was almost like waving the white flag, which is ridiculous. A lot of the top teams do it, but I've been brought up with the 4-4-2, and there's nothing wrong with knowing your strengths. But we were being found out in a lot of the games. We only won 2 games away from home all season. That's probably the close to the average for a newly promoted team. I could have been more tactical and gone for more draws, but it's very hard to change your mindset. A newly promoted team at the start of the season, the sun, the new badge, the better hotels. They have a spring in their step. Let's go. The clever response is, no, don't let's go. Take your draw. And with a sitting midfielder, you're not necessarily settling for a draw. You can still play on the counter-attack. But there's no point in being too clever tactically if you don't have the players. We were always going to be in a battle. And what we did have was a good dressing room. I don't remember the game, but we were up against a team who were playing 3 in the middle, and we only had 2 because we were at home. The Sunderland fans weren't mad about 3 in the middle. Too much fannying about. Get up and at him. 2 strikers, 2 wingers. So, this time, we were outnumbered in the middle of the park. Yorkie was blown a bit. He was 34 or 35 now, and he was up against 3 in the middle. Someone was injured, so Yorkie ran across to me. Gaffer. Gaffer, you know, they've got an extra man. What should we do? I went, Yorkie, you need to run fucking more. He went, right, right, and he ran back. That was me at my tactical best. I'm sure he thought I was going to get a drawing board out and give him a masterclass on how to deal with the problem. I think today I'd be a bit more cautious. It's the problem of being a big club like Sunderland and also being newly promoted. It's hard to be cautious. You tend to get carried by the emotions of the crowd. We played with our hearts more than our heads. Here we go, take on the world. When, really, I should have been saying, here, listen, one step at a time. Let's be hard to beat. But when you've been promoted, you've got into the habit of winning matches. That's why you were promoted. And you try to carry that into the Premiership. We had 10 points from 14 games. It was, generally, panning out the way I thought it would, after the giddiness of the first few games. It was going to be a struggle. It was going to be about survival. We came straight back after the Everton game and beat Derby. Derby were struggling too, but it was still a massive victory. We did okay against the teams around us, especially at home, and we had to. Stokesy provided the winner. In time added on, another of our late goals. I look back at the fixture list, and I can point to three or four games we needed to win to stay up. This was one of them. Derby had sacked their manager, Billy Davis, earlier in the week, and he'd been replaced by Paul Jewell. I thought they'd be kicking on a bit for the new manager. But we won. I rested Craig Gordon, and I mean rested, not dropped, after the 7 goals of the week before. We won, but Carlos Edwards broke his leg. That was a big loss for us. We went to Chelsea and lost 2-0. We worked hard, but it was one of those games where you take the 2-0. Liam Miller was sent off for a push on Pizarro. We dropped into the bottom three again, although we had 13 points from 16 games. Not too far off the point-a-game figure. I brought Ricky Spraggia to the club. Ricky had experience at Bolton, and I knew him from United. I was always thinking of moving things around, and Ricky was more of a defensive coach. I thought he'd help us. I moved Neil Bailey to work with the development squad, what used to be called the reserves. But I should have left the staff the way they were. We drew it home to Villa. We were robbed. We'd a goal in the last minute. Danny Collins headed in from a set piece. It was disallowed. A disgraceful decision. The extra 2 points, and the win, would have been massive for us. I read afterwards that I pursued the referee, Steve Bennett, down the tunnel after the game. But I had to go that way anyway, to the dressing room. Was I supposed to go out to the car park? The game at Reading, just before Christmas, was the only time I really lost my temper as a manager. I'd lost my temper before, but I'd used my temper. This time, I used physical force. I grabbed a member of staff, put his head on the table, and tried to pull his tie off. But he was a Reading staff member, not one of ours. It was the first half, a tight game. Maybe the pressure was building on me, I don't know. Steve Coppell was managing Reading, and he had a couple of lads working with him. Wally Downs and Kevin Dillon. I looked across at their dugout, and Kevin Dillon was looking back across, calling me a wanker. I go, "What, me?" He goes, "Yeah, yeah, you're always on the fucking referee." I said nothing back. I never got involved with opposition managers or staff, never. We got to half-time, and I'm walking back to the tunnel beside Kevin Dillon, and I say, "Are you calling me a wanker?" And he goes, "Well, you're always on at the referee." I said, "I never said fuck all to the referee. Who the fuck are you calling a wanker?" But I went to our dressing room and thought no more of it. The second half, and we were robbed, again, in injury time. Stephen Hunt got a shot in, and the linesman on the far side reckoned it was over the line. It wasn't, but the goal was given. It was another big, big loss for us. When it was 1-1, Kenwyn had gone through and was near to winning it for us in injury time. So instead of winning, we'd lost. At the end of the game, walking down the stairs, I saw Wally Downs shaking all my players' hands. Unlucky lads. You generally don't see staff shaking the other team's hands. I said nothing. It had been a big win for Reading. There was a lot of celebrating. I went into our dressing room. I wasn't annoyed with the players. More the decision. I spoke to the players and staff. "Okay, we're all upset. But whatever we do, we're Sunderland. We show a bit of class. We accept the decision. We move on and get ready for next week." The players were getting themselves organised, and I was waiting for my staff to go in for a drink with Steve Coppell and the Reading lads. I didn't want to, but I kept thinking, we're Sunderland, we do things properly. The staff were taking ages, so I said, "I'll go on, lads, follow me in." I walked into Steve's office. Wally Downs was there, and their director of football, Nick Hammond. Kevin Dillon was sitting down. I go, "Well done, lads, well done." Wally was right in front of me, and I said, "Wally, do you always shake players' hands after you've just beaten them?" And he goes, "Yeah, right, yeah, yeah." And as I was talking to Wally, Kevin Dillon stood up and goes, "Don't you come in here," and I grabbed him. Got his head on the table, pulled his tie up. "I'm fucking warning you." Nick Hammond grabbed me. "What are you doing? You fucking get out of our office." I went, "Fuck yous anyway." Dillon said, "What are you having a go at me for? I'm a Sunderland man." I went, "Fuck you." I walked out. My staff hadn't come in yet. I wasn't going back to Sunderland that night with the players. I was going home to Manchester, so I had a car waiting for me to bring me to Heathrow. My phone went off about 10 minutes later. It was one of my staff. Everything all right, Gaffer? I hadn't given them a heads up about what had happened in Steve Coppell's office. They'd followed me in after I'd left. All right, lads? And somebody said, your manager has just attacked one of our staff. And apparently Raymond van der Gouw, our goalkeeping coach, said, well, can we still have a sandwich? No, I think it's best if you leave. Whether I was reacting to the pressure, two unlucky defeats, our position in the bottom three, I don't know. I'd like to think I'd have had a go at Dillon even if we'd been at the top of the table. We were on a bad run now. We'd lost three in a row, and then Manchester United came to the Stadium of Light on Boxing Day. We stayed in the Ramside Hall Hotel near Durham the night before the game, Christmas night. We got together at about 9 or 10 o'clock to give the players more time at home with their families. They put it to the players and staff that, if they wanted, they could have one or two beers. My thinking was it might help them relax before the big game against United. But it mustn't have worked, because they beat us 4-0. Rooney was brilliant, and Ronaldo was in his pomp. There were 47,000 people there. Maybe it was my ego. Let's have a go at them. We were a bit open. Ronaldo's goal, a free kick, just at half-time, killed us. That made it 3-0. After the game, Alex Ferguson came to my office for a drink. When he was leaving, he said to me, give me a call about Johnny Evans. He could see I was down in the dumps after the game. I think he looked at me and thought, he needs to dig out here. It was the one time he showed me, I suppose, affection. I'll watch your back. He caught me off guard. He actually cares a bit. Niall got on to David Gill, and we got Johnny, but there was a massive loan fee. So Ferguson showed me affection, but it was business too. But, and this is important, Johnny made a huge difference to us. From now on, every home game was going to be massive. The next one was 4 days after the United game against Bolton, and we won it 3-1. It was Kieran Richardson's first full game after his injury, and that was a big boost. It was our second win in 14 games. We were out of the bottom three for the start of the new year. Obviously, the time to be out of the bottom three is at the end of the season. But it was a psychological thing. There's always weight attached to the bottom three at the turn of the year. Our first game of 2008 was at Blackburn. We got a penalty early in the second half. Yorkie was our penalty taker, but Dean Whitehead took it instead. He missed. Brad Friedel saved it. Then Blackburn got a dodgy penalty and scored. We lost 1-0. I was fuming afterwards, and had a go at Yorkie for not taking the penalty. I hammered him, gave him a right bollocking. You fucking bottled it. That might have been a bit harsh, but he should have taken the penalty. He took his bollocking well. We dropped back into the bottom three because Wigan, who'd been below us, drew with Liverpool. The transfer window was open again, and we got Johnny Evans back on loan. Phil Bardsley came in, also from United. We brought in Rada Prica from Aalborg, and Andy Reid from Charlton. Of the four, three worked out well for us, and they were the three lads I knew. Rada had been strongly recommended by the scouts, but he didn't do too much. Ideally, if you're interested in a player, you try to watch him, possibly 10 times in different circumstances. Home, away, derby matches. The manager can't watch him that often, so he's relying on his scouts and videos. We needed a striker, and the scouts were recommending Rada. If you don't know a player too well, you try to sort out a loan deal. But Rada cost us 1 or 2 million. I watched a few video clips of him, and it wasn't as if I was delighted with what I saw. Staff and scouts push. He's the answer. I took the gamble, but he wasn't the answer. I rang Mark Hughes about Robbie Savage. Robbie wasn't in the Blackburn team, and I asked Mark if we could try to do a deal, a permanent or loan deal. Sparky said, yeah, yeah. He's just lost his way here, but he could still do a job for you. Robbie's legs were going a bit, but I thought he might come up to us with his long hair and give us a lift. The way Yorkie had, a big personality in the dressing room. Sparky gave me permission to give him a call, so I got Robbie's mobile number and rang him. It went to his voicemail. Hi, it's Robbie. What's up? Like the Budweiser ad. I never called him back. I thought, I can't be fucking signing that. We got knocked straight out of the FA Cup 3-0 by Wigan, again. It proved to me once more that squad rotation doesn't work if you don't have enough top players in your squad. I'd made the same mistake in the League Cup against Luton. A good run in the Cup could only have helped to build momentum and confidence. But we didn't get it. We beat Portsmouth at home, 2-0. Kieran Richardson scored both goals. We hung our hat on the home matches. We couldn't keep the ball well enough away from home. A different environment, having to travel, the fans behind the home team, they'd push their team the extra yard. The home team being used to the surroundings. So many teams like ourselves fighting for home results. Winning away from home is always very hard in the Premiership. Chelsea, United, City, it's going to be hard to win here. Going to Norwich was less obvious, but the travel from Sunderland was difficult. There was once we went to Birmingham and the dressing room door was locked. We were waiting for ages, or we'd arrived too early, encouraged by the home club. We'd be sitting there for hours waiting for the match. We didn't play those games at Sunderland. I always wanted the visiting team to speak highly of us. Home win, away loss, home win, away loss. That was the pattern. We went to Tottenham and lost. Birmingham came to us. We won. Our new lad, Preek, has scored. But he never really kicked a ball after that. We jumped to a mid-table position because we weren't drawing matches. We went to Liverpool and they beat us, 3-0. Kieran Richardson was injured again. His hamstring. We'd rushed him back because we were desperate to have him in the team. He was an important player, and as an ex-United player, he was keen to play at Liverpool. A silly mistake. Wigan came to us, and we beat them. At last, 2-0. There were 46,000 people there. Dixon Etuhu scored our first, a header. I brought Dixon in from Norwich. We wanted him for his physical presence. He was a midfielder, good at set plays, defending and attacking. He'd been away at the African Cup of Nations with Nigeria. And then Darrell Murphy scored another, from an Andy Reid pass. The win against Wigan was a good, tough, ugly result. But then we went and got beaten by Portsmouth. Kano came on as a sub. I think some of our lads were being dead nice to him. They weren't tackling him or aggressive enough. We gave away a soft penalty. Defoe scored it. It was our 10th away defeat in a row. So much for having a go. We should have been more defensive. We went to Derby and drew 0-0. That was a poor result. Derby were at the bottom of the table and we needed the 3 points. Michael Chopra had a goal disallowed. The decision was a disgrace. It was 2 or 3 yards onside. But referees do have the toughest job in the game. They must enjoy it. I'd made a lot of changes since the start of the season. I hadn't planned on making so many. But although some of the players I brought in weren't working out, it was progress. We were still adjusting to the demands of the Premiership. You have to experiment a bit as you go. You don't have a choice. We needed better and bigger. We needed experience. The key is in knowing where to make the change and when to leave something the way it is. That's management. It's cruel for those left out or moved, but it's the nature of the game. I put Liam Miller on the transfer list. He was late too often. I was sick of the excuses and I told him I'd had enough of it. His agent rang to tell me that Liam lived on a busy junction and it was very hard to get out. I brought in Bill Bezic, the sports psychologist, just to mix it up a little bit. A different voice for the players. He came in a couple of days a week. He was there if any of the players or staff wanted to talk to him. Bill's office was across from mine, and I noticed immediately that a lot of the staff were going to see him. I hadn't anticipated that. So straight away I thought, I'll have to get rid of them. They're talking about me. No. The lesson was that I had to focus on my staff to make sure that they were okay. The staff need to feel wanted. The sports psychology is useful, but in moderation. The lad who went to the World Cup with the England team, Dr. Steve Peters, has written a book called The Chimp Paradox, about the chimp in your head. The chimp is running the show. I tried to read it. I am open-minded, but my chimp wouldn't let me. Everton came to the Stadium of Light. We were poor, but they beat us 1-0. We had Chelsea the week after, the same result. The disappointments are remembered more than the highs. They're what spur you on, because they hurt. I enjoyed the victories, but took them with a pinch of salt. Especially in the Premiership, you're always going, God, look who we've got next week. Then it changed. The stats were telling us we were going down. But we went to Villa Park and won. Our first away win. West Ham came to us. We beat them. Andy Reid's goal, a volley in the 95th minute, made it 2-1. In front of 46,000 people, it was unbelievable. It was a sixth goal we'd scored in stoppage time. We went away to Spain for 3 or 4 days just after that win and got a bit of sun on our backs. Imagine if we'd gone after being beaten. The weather up in the northeast is bleak. On a good day, the wind is 60 miles an hour. Away for a few days, we could mix training up a bit. The lads could get the sun. They could sit out in the evenings. At this stage of the season, you're looking around at the other team struggling. You're playing with your minds, recharging the batteries. It's the same training, same boots, same balls, same bibs, same kit man, but you're changing the scenery. The justification comes if you come back and get a few results. We came back, went to Fulham, and beat them. 3-1. It was a comfortable victory. We played well. As a manager, I was enjoying the chats with other managers after the games. Not so much enjoying what was being said, but picking up on their vibes and listening out for a little snippet of wisdom. I'd be thinking, what makes this club work, or what are the staff like? So I went up to see Roy Hodgson, the Fulham manager, and his assistant, Ray Lewington. It was like the scene in Steve Cotterill's office at Burnley the year before, but without the humour. Steve had turned his disappointment into a joke, but this was different. They were all going, we're fucked, we're fucked. It was embarrassing. I had my Diet Coke and one of those little sausages and we left. I remember thinking, my goodness, they are fucked. But they stayed up. Roy got the Liverpool job, and now he's managing England. We got 9 points from 3 games. We'd identified these games as ones to bring up our points average. Chops and Kenwin scored 2 each in those 3 games, and they came at the right time. Those couple of weeks, late March into early April, kept us up. Manchester City came and beat us. They fluked it in the last minute. I got stick after the Newcastle game away. They beat us 2-0. I think it was the only time that season when the fans got on my back a little bit. I played 3 in midfield, although it wasn't with a sitting midfielder. It was more an attacking formation. I played Andy Reid off the front, but I didn't play 2 out-and-out strikers. I know what derbies mean to the fans, and I think they felt the formation was negative. It wasn't. But every time you lose a football match, you've got your tactics wrong. And we were a goal down after 4 minutes. A Michael Owen header. There were mind games going on before the match. The police got us there 3 hours before kick-off. Players get bored. Testosterone levels are high. It's too long to wait. Johnny and Phil Bardsley were injured, so didn't play. They were a big loss. The next game was the other derby, Middlesbrough at home. It was a brilliant game. We went behind after 4 minutes. Danny Higginbottom equalised 2 minutes later. Chops put us ahead just before half-time. Craig made some great saves, but they equalised. I put Daryl Murphy on as a sub and he scored the winner in the last minute. Another late goal. A header from Grant Ledbetter's corner. This time our attitude, let's go for it, got us a result. That win kept us up. We were staying in the Premiership with 2 games to spare. That win summed up our season in a sense. It was hard going. We scraped through. The lads stuck at it. We got a late goal. We survived. I wanted to beat Bolton in the next game and help get them relegated. I was thinking ahead to the next season. I didn't want to be playing Bolton again. I thought they had the strengths to cause us more problems than some of the other clubs around us. They beat us and stayed up. Arsenal came to us for the last game of the season. We had a bugger of chances, but they beat us. Overall, it had been stressful and tough going. There'd been a bit of violence and wheeling and dealing, but we achieved what we'd set out to do. In the 2 years, we got promoted and we'd stayed up. Job done. I wanted to leave my mark at Sunderland, but I don't think I quite did. I did okay, but it wasn't good enough for me. We were promoted, and we averaged a point per game in the Premiership, which, on paper, a lot of managers would take. But I wanted more. I could have done better. 9. I have my days when I still analyse those results. But that's the manager's life. We'd survived, and I should have been thinking about surviving the next season just a bit better. That was my big mistake. I decided we'd make it into the top 8. It was mad. We just finished 3 points and 3 places above the bottom 3. Our next challenge should have been to finish 6 or 7 places off the bottom. But I thought, because we'd survived, we'd be a lot better and a lot wiser, and we'd shoot up the table. It takes 4 or 5 years to establish yourself in the Premiership. Teams that have a brilliant first season often drop in the second. Don't overextend yourself. Let your players and fans know staying up for the next couple of years is the achievement, or creating something. We'd survived, but I ended up thinking about the games we'd let go. I started adding points to our total. Well, there'll be a gimme next year. We'll get those points, and we'll be in the top half of the table. I forgot about the games we'd nicked in the last minute, and mightn't win next year. No. We'd beat the same teams again and get closer to the teams we hadn't beaten. I wasn't shouting it from the rooftops, but I was thinking it. And it was fucking madness. I should have been reminding myself that a couple of years earlier, we'd been heading to League One. We'd buy players. There was a new owner coming in to take us to a new level. The jargon's there. A new level. We'd seen it happen at other clubs. More money would get me better players. I got Pascal Chimbonda, Timu Taino, and Steed Malbranck, all from Spurs. I brought in El Hadji Diouf from Bolton, Djibril Cissé, unknown from Marseille, David Healy from Fulham, Anton Ferdinand from West Ham, and George McCartney. We signed him back from West Ham. When I started at Sunderland, the recruitment of players had been frantic, because we'd only a few days, and, really, every one of them had done well. But the group of players I brought in at the start of the 08-09 season didn't work out. I brought in David Mailer earlier, and he did well. And Cissé was decent, but he was on loan. None of the others gave us real value for money. For a club like Sunderland, you need certain characters. Players I'd brought in previously. Danny Higginbottom, Paul McShane. Mightn't have had the talents of the new recruits, but they had better attitudes. I wouldn't go as far as to say that the new players had bad attitudes, but they just weren't right for Sunderland. They didn't plug into what we were about. The training, the area, the conditions, the demands. George Graham made the point, if you're signing a player, he has to see it as a step up, or else he'll feel that he's doing you a favour. The lads from Spurs in particular left me with the impression that they thought that they were doing me a favour. Previously, I'd been signing players who saw coming to Sunderland as a challenge. But the new signings, they weren't a disaster, but they weren't the hungriest group of players. And maybe that had an effect on the group we already had. In their defence, I brought too many in, too soon. Previously, I'd already known most of the players I'd brought in. Now, with the new lads, I expected much more. And that was unfair on them, and unrealistic. I thought, well, you're better than what I've got, so we'll be finishing in the top 10. What had been good enough last year wasn't going to be good enough this year. Instead of 8 or 9 new players, I should have concentrated on bringing in 2 or 3 really good quality players, 2 or 3 good characters. But the problem there was, the real quality players still weren't available to Sunderland. We tried to buy Johnny Evans. We offered United 12 million for him. And David Gill, their chief executive, was laughing at me. You're wasting your time. He got fed up with Niall increasing the offer. 8, 9, 10, up to 12. We weren't going to get Johnny. He'd have been worth every penny. But bringing in so many players, it was too much. I can see that now, and I'm annoyed with myself for seeing it now. We already had some decent players. So it should have been about more quality, not quantity. I'd always have doubts about the players I'm signing. If I was signing Messi today, I'd be going, I hope he settles into the area. I hope he likes Sunderland and the Dark Knights. Because you just don't know. There's never a guarantee. You might sign a player and think, he's the deal. But there's always a chance that he can get injured. Every club has signed a striker who hasn't delivered the goals. Pre-season, we were playing in a mini-tournament in Portugal and we conceded a goal in a match in Faro. I was disappointed. It was a free kick from 30 yards. I questioned why Craig Gordon had needed a wall. The next day, I challenged a few players to beat me from 30 yards. I put the gloves on and I said that if they could get the ball past me, I'd give them £1,000 each, but if they missed, they'd have to give me 100. 8 or 9 players lined up, and I knew that Craig and the other goalkeepers were pissed off at it. They didn't even look at my goalkeeping skills. They just did their stretches. I tipped a few onto the bar, onto the post, and I kept a clean sheet. I won 800 quid off the players. I could have lost 8 grand. I was trying to generate a bit of banter, but I had embarrassed and maybe belittled the goalkeepers. I hadn't meant to, but I didn't think the keeper should be beaten from 25 or 30 yards. I think I lost Craig for a few weeks, and maybe longer because of that. We lost the first game to Liverpool. Always a tough one. Then we had a brilliant win at Tottenham. Kieran Richardson and Cissé scored for us. We were going for a walk the morning of the game in London. It was about 11 o'clock. We were all waiting. No sign of Chimbonda. He turned up 1/4 hour late. I told him, you're a fucking joke. Late for a walk. He was all, what's up, man? Very relaxed about it, not apologetic. It seemed his time was more important than ours. He was new to the club and he was sending messages, the wrong ones, straight away. It was 11 o'clock. It wasn't 6 in the morning. If he'd been a bit apologetic, my response would have been different. I'd had him in the team for the afternoon, but I dropped him. He wasn't even on the bench. We won 2-1. After the match, everyone's buzzing in the dressing room, and Chimbonda's right in the middle of them, jumping around. And I'm looking at him, going, you fucker, you can't even let me enjoy the win. Instead of sitting there going, I can't believe I was late, one of our first games, I could have cost the team. He was jumping around with everybody. That irritated me as much as the fact that he'd been late earlier. It was a sign of things to come. Manchester City beat us 3-0 at home, a bad result. We drew away to Wigan. We should have won. We had great chances. 4 games, 4 points. We'd lost our first 2 home matches and done well away from home. It was almost the opposite of the season before. But then we beat Middlesbrough at home, always a big win, 7 points from 5. Then we lost at Villa. They scored from a free kick. 2 players on our wall. They didn't jump out of the way, but they didn't stand their ground either. Diouf and Chimbonda. Michael Chopra came to see me and told me he had issues with gambling. He told me how much he'd lost, and I knew it would have been a lot more than the amount he mentioned. I made a phone call for him to Sporting Chance, when I spoke to Peter Kay, who'd founded the clinic with Tony Adams. Peter had been up to the club before to talk to the players about the pitfalls. Alcohol, gambling, drugs. And we made an arrangement between Chops, Peter and myself. The Chops would go down to the clinic in Hampshire for a week or so. He was an important player for us, so his absence would have been noticed. Maybe our attitude was wrong or naive. We'd send him away for a week, and he'd be fixed. We had to start the season without Kenwyn Jones. He got injured in June in a friendly in Trinidad against England. He picked up a bad knee injury in an unnecessary collision with bloody David James. So we started the season without our main striker, because of an injury he picked up on a poxy friendly. Not at the end of the season, but halfway through the summer. For politics. The FA thought that Jack Warner, the FIFA vice president, would give them his vote in their World Cup bid if they agreed to the game. We lost Kenwyn, and Warner didn't even give the FA the vote. He rang me the next season to tell me that Kenwyn was in the Trinidad squad. Kenwyn was still injured, nowhere near ready to play. Warner didn't know, and he didn't care. He told me how important he was, and that he objected to my tone. That was when I called him a clone, and more than a clone. Dwight York was probably my best signing. He was a big character, and good on the training pitch. At the end of our first season in the Premiership, his contract was up. He'd got us promoted, and he'd helped keep us up. But I released him. I said, Yorkie, you know, there's no deal for you. So he went. But towards the end of the summer, it looked like we weren't going to get many deals done. So I phoned and asked him if he fancied another year. We agreed that he wouldn't be playing any more internationals. He was 35 at this stage. He came back, having been told that he wasn't needed anymore. But he got over that. I think he knew what I'd been thinking, that I was looking for younger players with a bit more legs and energy. But he decided to play again for Trinidad. We disagreed about that, but it wasn't heated, no swearing or not speaking to each other. I said, I can't believe you're going back playing. You're 34 or 5. He explained that there was some kind of financial incentive involved. That didn't please me either. I just felt he wasn't concentrating. He took his eye off the ball once or twice, and they left him on the bench, with one or two other experienced players. We played Northampton at home in the League Cup. We were 2-0 down. This was one of the times when I was going mad. But we scored 2 goals in injury time, and eventually we won on penalties. I didn't play Yorkie that night, and he stood at the end of the tunnel during the penalties. Normally, the players on the bench group together while the penalties are being taken, but Yorkie took no interest in it. That irritated me. I left him out for 1 or 2 games. His attitude disappointed me a little. My plan had been to bring him back. But I just felt he could have given us a bit more when we were under the cosh. I suppose Yorkie's argument would be that he'd been bombed out. He was out of the first team plans. I'd made him train with the reserves for a week or two. He probably felt he deserved a bit better. Maybe I should have pulled him aside and said, Yorkie, come on, pull your finger out. What you quickly learn as a manager is you need the players more than they need you. You make your own luck, but you still need a few breaks. Into October, we're beating Arsenal 1-0 at the Stadium of Light. We're into injury time, and they equalise. Fabregas scores with a header from a corner. It was a turning point in my career. We'd had a mixed start. If we'd beaten them, it would have been brilliant. The injection we needed, a big win against a big team. We went to Fulham. Kieran Richardson scored from a free kick, but the referee disallowed it. He said it was because somebody was pushing in the wall. It was Chimbonda. He shouldn't have been in the fucking wall. It was our free kick. Kieran had another free kick that hit the woodwork 3 times. It came off the bar, hit the post, rolled across, and hit the other post. If he'd won those 2 games, we would have been 5th or 6th in the league. I have my days when I still analyse those results, but that's the manager's life. Ellis Short, the man who was going to take over the club, had arrived. He came in on a horse. He hadn't come on board when we bought the new players. He'd been in the process of becoming the major shareholder. I was in the last year of my contract. There'd been talks in the background between Niall and Michael Kennedy, but nothing had fallen into place yet. Part of me was thinking, with a new man there, we'll see how it goes. Ellis Short was more hands-on. There were more phone calls than previously. I got used to that. But I don't think he knew much about football. He dropped me the odd text. You're playing the Gunners, man. You've got to beat them. And he rang me a few times at the training ground. He'd ask me about players and why certain players weren't playing. He asked me about dropping Chimbonda and how I was going to handle it. This was new. I'd had casual chats with Niall about, say, when a player was coming back from injury and players we were after. Normal football chat. But I'd been left to run the team. Previously, with the consortium, meetings had been quite informal. They were clever with it, but never felt that they were questioning me. But Ellis Short's calls, I resented them a bit. I was naive, too. I'd say things like, we should finish 8th. In reality, a great target would have been 14th. Maybe a key to success in the Premiership is to drop your expectations. Survival is the first goal. It's one of the things that soured the relationship between myself and the new owner. I told him, yeah, we're going places. Then, when we picked up a few injuries and results weren't going our way, he can't have been pleased. After we beat Newcastle in our next game, we had 12 points from 9 games. And it was the first time we'd beaten Newcastle at home in 30-odd years. It was electric. The tension. Cisse scored, and Kieran. The level of player we had now had gone up since I'd come to the club. We played really well. I think it was my happiest day at Sunderland. So the loss at Stoke midweek was frustrating. It would have been a real sign of progress, grinding out a result, even a pint at Stoke. Could we come down from the high of Newcastle? No, we couldn't. Chelsea hammered us 5-0. But Chelsea could do that to anybody. The killer was Portsmouth at home. We battered them. Their winner was a penalty in injury time. Who gave away the penalty? Diouf, man as a sub. He just booted the lad up in the air. It was an unbelievable foul. In the dressing room after, I said, Diouf, what were you doing? He said, well, I was just trying to tackle him. I think he'd been angry when I put him on, frustrated that he hadn't started the game. It was a sticky patch we were going through, but not that sticky. We were still averaging a point a game. But there were rumours circulating at the time that I was going to leave, that I'd lost my rag with everybody and had had enough. It was nonsense. In Sunderland and Newcastle, there's a big rumour every few months, and I was facing that one. I'd missed 1 or 2 days training. But I do that sometimes. I'd step back to give people a break from me. I'd be elsewhere, meeting people or at matches. It was a step back from the training ground, not from work. I don't think it's a good idea for the manager to be visible every day. But the story this time was that I hadn't been to training at all and I wouldn't be going to our next game at Blackburn. We stayed in the Hilton Hotel in Manchester the night before the Blackburn game. I'd missed a meal, and when I got there, I think it was Yorkie who said, oh, we heard you'd resigned. We turned it into a bit of banter. The next day at Blackburn, we were 1-0 down. Our two strikers, Cisse and Kenwyn Jones, are giving us nothing. It was like we were playing with 9 men. I ripped into them at half-time. I probably went overboard. It was a gamble. I thought they'd either respond to us, we'll show you, or they'd sulk. We went out in the second half, and Kenwyn scored inside a minute. Then Cisse scored. He ran over to the dugout and shook my hand. It was nice. I enjoyed it. I thought, fair play to you. What I liked about Cisse, he took his bollocking. He didn't sulk. He just went and scored the winning goal. Things were rosy again in the garden. But we lost at home to West Ham, and again to Bolton 4-1. The pressure was on. Home form is vital. We'd lost at home to Portsmouth. We'd lost at home to West Ham. We'd lost at home to Bolton. I think the fans wouldn't have minded losing the away games, but we were doing okay in the away games and struggling at home. It wasn't acceptable. The vast majority of the fans are seeing you at home. I'd hoped that we could get Bolton relegated at the end of the previous season, but they'd beaten us and stayed up. I always thought they were a team that could cause us difficulties. I'd gone to see them play at Middlesbrough the week before. I went to the game with Tony Loughlin and Ricky Spragia. I was driving. We were chatting about management, and I asked Tony if he'd ever be interested in becoming a manager. And Tony said, nah, I'd prefer to be out in the grass. So I went, what about you, Ricky? No. It was a proper overreaction. Myself and Tony both went, relax, it was just a question. But Ricky went, it's not for me. It's not for me, Gaffer. I said, all right, Ricky, it was only a fucking question. Bolton beat Middlesbrough 3-1 that day. They were strong and physical. A week later, on 29th of November, they beat us 4-1. The stats were ridiculous. We had so much possession. They had 4 shots on target. We were 1-0 ahead. Cisse scored again. But on the back of 2 or 3 defeats, we were nervous playing at home. Craig Gordon was carrying an injury and I'd asked him to play. He said, yeah, he'd have a go. But he got injured again in the game. He played on. I feel bad about that. I shouldn't have played Craig. I know we sometimes have to ask players who were injured to play, but this was too much of a risk. It was very unlucky. Prior to signing him, when he played at Hearts, he never missed a game. His record was brilliant. He came to us and had a string of injuries. Bad ones for a goalkeeper. Broken wrists and ankles. There was a lot of booing after the game. A lot of disappointment. They were booing me this time and the team. It was a we're fucking fed up type of booing. I stayed in Sunderland that night and the players came into training the next day. It wasn't a punishment. We'd planned to bring them in on Sunday and we were going to give them the Monday off. We'd bring them in on the day after a match to check on them. Any injuries or knocks from the game. Precautionary stuff. Standard procedure. If I was doing it again, I'd give them the day after the game off and bring them in the day after that. Their minds are elsewhere, especially after being beaten. Everyone's down, especially on a Sunday. I was still angry that morning. Not that we'd lost, but at the way we'd lost. It wasn't that we'd down tools, we hadn't. In terms of the stats, we'd had more than decent possession and we'd made twice as many passes as Bolton. But I know, try explaining that to supporters when they've just watched you lose 4-1. But we've been nervous. Individual mistakes, given daft goals away. But there was no argument, and no outbursts. I was disappointed that we were struggling. But I'd been in the game for almost 20 years, and I still knew that things weren't so bad. I drove home to my family after training on Sunday afternoon. I pulled over on the way back. I was knackered, and I had a snooze in the car on the side of the A19. I don't remember ever having done that before. There'd been no phone calls from the owner, nor from Niall after the game. There'd been no panic. But I spoke to Niall on Monday. He was in Portugal playing golf. I can't remember if he phoned me or I phoned him. He rarely spoke after a game. Niall mentioned that the players should be coming into training with smiles on their faces. I got the impression he'd been speaking to one or two players who'd been left out. I said, I don't expect to see people with smiles on their faces when we get beaten. If you want that, you should have employed Roy Chubby Brown. We were there to win matches, and if we lost, I expected people to be upset. The conversation wasn't too intense or awkward, but it was the first time Niall had talked about a team matter in the 2 and a bit years that I'd been at the club. So it was a bit strange. But he was the chairman and entitled to say anything like that. Later, Niall said that he hadn't used those words. He'd said that he wanted me to come back with new energy and a smile on my face. Something like that. I stayed at home on Tuesday and headed back to Sunderland on Wednesday. Our reserves were playing United that night. And I was going up a touch earlier. I'd be staying in Sunderland for the rest of the week. We had a match against United on Saturday. While I was driving, the owner rang me. He said, I hear you're coming in one day a week. I said, one day a week? Who are you talking to? Well, that's what I heard. I went, it's nonsense. How could I come in one day a week? I'm on the way up now. We've got a game on Saturday. He said he was disappointed with the Bolton result. His tone wasn't good. Your location, where you live. You need to move up with your family. I was in the third year of a 3-year contract. The arrangement, the flat in Durham, my family in Manchester, had suited everybody, until now. I said, we've had a bit of success. Why should I move up now? He said, I think it's important that you live in the area. I'm not sure if I said something like, why don't you move up? He lived in London. But I did say, I'm not moving. I'm in the last 6 or 7 months of my contract anyway. It might have been a different conversation if we'd been talking face to face. Then I might have said, well, if I sign a new contract, I'll move up. I can understand that. But I said, it's not affected results previously. The conversation didn't end well. It was a case of, no one tells me where I should live, and the accusation that I was only coming in one day a week hung there. There's always hearsay about managers at football clubs. There are always rumours. He comes in at 7 in the morning. He's sleeping with a girl from the office. He's a big drinker. They're always there. He's a loner. He's too friendly with the players. I'd lived through my career with those rumours. Brian Clough is rarely in. It didn't bother me. Jack Charlton lets them go for a drink. And we loved him for it. If Ellis Short actually thought that I was trying to run the team on a day a week, he should have arranged to see me. I thought he was talking down to me. He spoke to me like I was something on the bottom of his shoe. I felt I'd been doing reasonably well so far. So I thought, I'm not putting up with this. I drove home. I phoned Michael Kennedy in the car. Listen, Michael, I'm not having all of this. Michael spoke to Niall. Niall wasn't sure why the conversation between myself and Ellis Short had ended so badly. Apparently Ellis Short was surprised that I was so upset. And before I knew it was over. Tony Loughlin got in touch with me on Thursday morning. He'd been told that Ricky would be taking the team for Saturday's game against United, and that I wouldn't be going back. Michael had been talking to Niall. Niall texted me, saying he'd sort the contracts out. It must have been difficult for Niall. Peter Walker, the chief executive, had left the club a few months earlier. I'd only met the new man, Steve Walton, once with Niall. There was an agreement within 24 hours that I would leave. There'd be a severance payment, and we'd move on. Statements were issued. It was over. I was very disappointed, but not really shocked, although it was very sudden. Later, Ellis Short said he'd been very taken aback at my reaction to his phone call. That might be true, but he never picked up the phone to me to see if there'd been a misunderstanding or to arrange for us to speak again properly. Later he said that he wasn't trying to question my commitment or insist on moving my family to Sunderland. I don't think he was sorry to see me go, and I didn't want to work for him. You lose a few matches, and suddenly everybody questions where you live. The media reports said I'd left, I'd walked, I'd resigned. But I didn't resign. We agreed mutually that we'd part ways. There was a statement from Sunderland saying that everything had been agreed amicably, but then I had to wait ages before I was paid. I collected my bits and pieces from the flat in Durham, but I didn't go back to the club. Tony collected my things from my office for me. Ricky took the job till the end of the season, and I was left wondering why he'd reacted that way when I'd asked him if he fancied management the week before. I didn't resign or walk out. I said I couldn't work with Ellis Short. An agreement was reached. I wasn't answerable to Ellis Short. I was answerable to the chairman or the chief executive. Walking out is an unfair expression. Sometimes a manager's position is just impossible. My career at Sunderland ended after a difficult 3 or 4 weeks, not 2 or 3 months, like I've seen other managers get. We were still on a pint a game. If you kept that up for 10 years, you'd still be in the Premiership. But it was over. It still saddened me. I still think I should have been the manager of Sunderland. I really liked the club, and I liked the people. I can be critical of myself about many things. I know I could be more tolerant of people. I know my recruitment could have been a lot better, and, ultimately, that will make or break you. But the idea that I wasn't a hard worker, or that I only turned up now and again, it was nonsense. I knew when to go in and when to dip out, to recharge the batteries or give people a break for me. We'd some games coming up, and I knew there were a couple of good results around the corner. Not long before, there'd been talk of a contract extension. No, it was gone. A bad spell is always coming. But I think I'd earned the right to get through that spell. Again, it was weeks, not months. But Dennis Short was new, and I wasn't his manager. He owed me nothing. He wasn't there when we were promoted. I'd done nothing for him yet. I should have read that script a little bit better. It's probably true that the working relationship was never going to work, not because he was some big bad Texan and I was some grumpy Northsider from Cork. I don't like being spoken down to. Steve Bruce rang me the following summer when he was offered the Sunderland job. I said, go for it. I said the same thing to Martin O'Neill. A few days after I left Sunderland, Yorkie texted me. All the best. I texted him back. Go fuck yourself. I saw him a few years ago. We both played in a charity match. We said hello to each other, but there was no real conversation. And it's sad, because I had great days with Yorkie. I could have handled things differently. 10. Maybe. I'm just making loads and loads of excuses. The penny only dropped when I left Ipswich. The owner, the chief executive and the manager had never met together while I was there. Marcus Evans, Simon Clegg and myself were never in the same room. There was the occasional video link-up to the owner, but the three of us never met. I'd meet the owner, Marcus, but Simon, the chief executive, wouldn't be there. I'd meet with Simon, but the owner wouldn't be there. Or they met when I wasn't there. I never once said, can the three of us get together to see about getting some players in? There was never that trust. Never. You want to see people's eyes. Michael Kennedy gave me a call. Niall had been at some sort of club owners' meeting and had bumped into Marcus Evans, the owner of Ipswich Town. Whatever was said between them, Niall phoned Michael and Michael phoned me. Would I go and meet Marcus Evans in London? I got the train, then the car to his house in the Boltons in Chelsea. He lived a few doors away from Ellis Short. This was in April. It was 5 or 6 months since I'd stopped working at Sunderland. After the initial shock, I hadn't been missing the buzz of management. I wasn't pining. Once I knew it was over, it was over. It might seem like a cold attitude, but I always remember the club chairman talking to Brian Clough in The Damned United. First there's the chairman, then there's the directors, then there's the fans and the players. And then, bottom of the pile, there's the fucking manager. The manager is important, but not that important. I always knew I'd be gone one day, but at the same time, I felt I hadn't finished the job at Sunderland because of the way things had ended. You always want to prove people wrong. We're almost brainwashed into thinking that the longer we're out of work, the harder it is to get back in. I was a bit anxious about it. The list of good ex-managers who've been forgotten about is frightening. But I felt I'd done enough at Sunderland to give me a chance. I should have been more patient. I met Marcus Evans. It was just the two of us. We talked about the club, how he'd bought it, how it had been struggling, and would I be interested in managing it. It was an interview, I think. The job wasn't just there if I wanted it. He wasn't offering me anything. A nice guy. I liked him. I thought I'd be able to work for Marcus. I told him we'd see how it went, and I went back home.